Folks, we're down to your headliner for the evening. You know him from Dumb and Dumber, Seinfeld. Everybody loves Raymond. Everybody make it real loud for Fred Stoller.
Yeah.
Fred. The pressure, the headline. I don't know, but thank you very much. Actually, this is how we do stand up. I did a, I want to get cocky. I did a show at a parking lot last week and I blew the roof off the place. There was no roof. I'm supposed to do a Q&A, but I got to do a joke or two to assume there'll be cues. I mean, know who I am. I was on Seinfeld. He mentioned Raymond, Cousin Gerard, Friends. That's what I always say when I see my mother. She goes, "Who are you? What have you accomplished?" has anyone seen me as Cousin Gerard on Everybody Loves Raymond?
Yeah.
One person. Here's some inside information. The difference between the cousin and the brother is $78 million. Brad Garrett's a gazillionaire and I'm here. I don't even get the purple thing behind me. I don't know what's going on. But no, this is like Pathetic Cribs or something. But no, I don't know if you know, I have a book called Maybe We'll Have You Back. I'm a guest star actor. I've never been a regular. And this book, this is why I won't quit on this, perseverance. I had the idea for this book for 10 years. It took 10 years to get published. A lot of publishers said, you know, you're not famous enough. I said, that's the idea of this, you know, it's like what shows feed you, what happens. Some said, we like it. We wish there was more sex. I said, me too. This is my biography. Then I remembered I slept with Kathy Griffin. They said, all right, he suffered enough. No, it's true. I had a one night stand with Kathy Griffin. It's she wanted to punch me in the face after sex. She hates men. And that's the big sex that got the book published. My mother, she's not very proud of me. I don't know. She always like puts me down, but this is my biggest accomplishment. Does anyone have kids? I was on a show called Handy Manny.
Hey.
I was rusty. I'm scared. I'm on LA Live. What is this? I'm one of the best of San Francisco. I don't understand. This was a toy. It was Tools That Talk, and I was the monkey wrench. I was so excited. I always wanted an action figure made of me. Wait. So like my mother always puts me down, you know, I've never been a regular, this, that, why do you have cats and not a girlfriend? So I said, I got this toy and I sent it to her. She goes, how much do you make? It's always about the money. I said, kidding around, I said 5 cents every time someone presses it. The next day she called me up. She goes, did you get the money? She was pressing it all day. That is pathetic. He needs money. Her rusty toy doesn't work. She broke a finger trying to make it work. I don't know. I wrote on Seinfeld for a season. I knew Larry David. I started with him in the New York stand-up days. And actually a Curve episode was based on something that happened. A surprise birthday party for a friend that we started with. He goes, I'm not going to scream surprise. He came later. And he's like an idiot. Yeah. So he goes, you're pathetic. When's the last time you got laid? You're like a pathetic loser. Goes, maybe you could, you have a shitty life. Maybe you could, this is my Larry David impression. Thank you. He goes, maybe you could use the shitty things from your life and you use them for George episodes. So in real life, this annoying comedian gave me an Armani suit and he wanted a meal for it. And I took him to a place, Jerry's Deli, and he got a soda and it came to 20 bucks. He said, I'm just gonna save the meal. We'll and that became the Armani thing. He gave me an Armani suit. And then another episode, when I was a kid, our family went to a place in Florida called Monkey Jungle. And these grown men were throwing rocks at the monkeys. And the woman that works there goes, what are you throwing rocks at monkeys for? It's true. He goes, they started it. They started it like a monkey took a rock. The guy goes, "E, you son of a bitch, I'm getting my friend." So that was a Kramer story. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe I'm delusional that you'll have questions that'll take up 10 minutes. I don't know.
I have a question.
Any questions? Yeah,
I have one. Hi, Fred. It's Vahe. I bombed a few minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. Did you hate Vahe's set? That's the first question.
I was going to ask him that.
It was longer than last week, at least.
Oh, all right. Well, my question was, like, when you wrote on Seinfeld, was there something that we would recognize that was your idea? Like, what was your major contribution to that season?
Well, I guess what I was just saying, no one was paying attention to it.
You said curb. You said curb.
Oh, no, I got everyone confused. I'm sorry. Well, let me go back. I quit doing stand-up a long time ago. You can't dabble. I admire you guys. You got to do it in pandemics, under trucks, you know what I mean? I'm an old guy, so what's that? So basically, the one was the Kenny Banya soup for a meal, like I was saying, really happened to me. This annoying comedian said, "I'm huge, I work out with weights." And he said, he gave me an Armani suit, and he said, "Do you want a meal for it?" And that really happened, where we went twice and he calls me up, "Hey, you want to meet me?" And I met him. And again, he just had soup. And he said, "I'm going to save the meal." And when I pitched it to Larry, he goes, "Jerry's more assertive than you. He would say right away, this counts as the meal." And the way Seinfeld works is there's no table. Everyone is coming up with their own ideas. So I was sort of on my own. So you'd have to wait and try to wait for the door to open to pitch an idea to Jerry and Larry. And I would pitch an idea, then Larry would look at me and go, "How does someone like you buy a shirt? How do you fund it? You're a schmuck." So, and then the one where Kramer has to apologize to a monkey. Like I said,
that's right.
I really saw a guy say a monkey started it. So he liked that story and said Kramer should have to apologize to a monkey. So basically, Kenny Banya. And in that episode, this is how old I am. In 1990, I did a show called London Underground, probably before most of you were born. And I met a woman in London, and it was fun and nice, and I think nudity, and it was good. And I paid for an open-ended ticket. And then all of a sudden, it was like the woman I met in London gave the ticket to someone who looked like her. It was her, but she was different. She'd get mad if I said "what" instead of "pardon." And remember that with the British guy? Yes. So I use things Larry was like, right, for my shitty life, you know. And just some behind the scenes thing. I pitched that idea originally for Jerry in my spec script, but Jerry couldn't have flaws. He would be too loserish to do something I would do, fly a woman in from London, and then she gets mad if you say "what" instead of "pardon." So Jerry was the hardest to write for because he wasn't neurotic or cheap or obsessive. So that's why the Kenny Banya story was good for Jerry.
That was a funny episode. I remember that one. That guy's still doing comedy, right? That guy's a comedian.
Steve Heitner?
Yes.
Yes, I started with him in New York, and he does the thing. I actually, the good thing from Seinfeld is I do cameo, where you can say, "Hey," and my line, I acted on Seinfeld, and the line they asked me to do is, "When Jerry's foot fell asleep, you're lucky, at least you got something to do."
Yeah.
I was Fred Yerkes, and the guy who couldn't remember Elaine. I played on Raymond. I got the part because I auditioned, and they were laughing because I said "now" the way he does. So now, what does a cat say? A talking cat? Meow. So they said when there's a part for the cousin, I would be it. So so I got to be the schmucky cousin on Raymond.
Cool. We have a question from Linda also. Linda, you want to ask this question?
Yes. First of all, I want to tell you, I am a big fan.
And until tonight.
because I am an aspiring comedian myself. I mean, aspiring comedian myself.
Aspiring.
Okay. And so I wanted to know, what did it feel like on your first appearance with David Letterman?
Well, actually, I did Letterman 1986, the night the space shuttle blew up. And it wasn't like it is now, where now when there's a thing in the news, it's all like the scrolls. The scroll started with 9/11. And Letterman starts out the show, he goes, "I don't mean to be irreverent. This is the worst day in American history. We're gonna do a show anyway. Here's comedian Fred Stoller." And they had me do my act in the room, the waiting area, to make sure I didn't do anything sad, because everyone was depressed about the shuttle blowing up. And I remember there was a lot of jokes about, one of my jokes is, "My cousin killed himself because nobody would play with him. He hung himself in a pole in his backyard. Now people play with him," So it was a lot of morbid stuff. So I couldn't do most of my jokes, because everyone was depressed. So it was very surreal doing it the night the space shuttle blew up. And Letterman, years later, went on Tom Snyder's show. And he said the worst show he ever had to do was the one when the space shuttle blew up. It would be funny if he said that Fred Stoller was on it. But he didn't say that. But you
were awesome. You killed.
Maybe you saw me a different time. But I was on Star Search, the original one in 84. I lost to Brad Garrett. I was on a Young Comedian. Are you all in the Bay Area?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I was on a Young Comedian special with a lot of guys from the Bay. Actually, Rob Schneider was on the Young Comedian special I was on. A guy sadly died, Warren Thomas from the Bay. So I it's funny because I remember my act was very subtle and low key. And when I'd have to headline, I wouldn't do so good because you got to work the crowd and, be loud and aggressive. So I'd work in some place like Virginia, and some people from the crowd would go, "It's Virginia, they're Hicks. Don't worry, Fred," or Phoenix. Then when I didn't do good in San Francisco, you can go, "It's San Francisco." But by the war, for what is it, they were kind of touristy, the punchline, because it was by the thing. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or compliments? Yeah,
we've got a question from Sherry. Sherry, you want to ask your question?
Hi, yes, how are you? First off, I just wanted to say that, it's so hard to be a comic in general, especially on Zoom, and having written for Larry David and whatnot, it's such an accomplishment. It's so hard to do. And anyways, what would you have to say about the comics of today? Who do you think has that same juice that Larry David had, even if he wasn't, if he was just writing, not necessarily acting in it? And as a writer, who do you think kind of embolizes that next generation of comedy?
It's hard. I don't keep up so much, and it's weird. My generation, we came from the thing where you did 6-minute sets, and you went on the Tonight Show or Young Comedian special. Now I'm saying like Raymond, I have no idea how people are big. Like there's some guy, I forgot his name, Tim Dillon, all of a sudden, I guess he goes on Joe Rogan and he's a good, now there are a lot of people are more like ranters or storytellers, So, I mean, I think, well, he's not a comic, but Dan Harmon, who created Rick and Morty.
Okay.
I mean, he's very genius. He's that anger, he's pretty good, but I'm not as versed with the new people coming up because all of a sudden people have 700,000 Twitter people and have no idea who they are. Or again, I think it could, there's people fighting in the background, but I think it could be from being on, I'm not, it's weird. I never got into comedy to be cool. Now it's almost like the jocks and the nerds. You have the Joe Rogan kind of aggressive, "Hey, don't be a pussy, hey." Hey, or the kind of nerdist. One time Bobcat said something pretty astute. We were around all these cool hip people. He goes, they're all so cool, they cancel each other out. So I'm from a generation where I'm a nebbish, like a sad sack was my style, but now they're all like too cool. I don't know. Don't be too
Did
cool.
Did you ever do any Curb Your Enthusiasm jokes in writing for that?
No, I was on hold. I don't want to jinx it, but maybe Larry didn't like I wrote this book and stories about him calling me a pathetic schmuck. But I'm hoping, but that hasn't happened yet. I don't want to jinx it.
Cool.
Man, thank you, and you're amazing.
Thank you so much.
We have another question from this person. She's got to unmute herself, though. Just a second.
Eric wants to know if you ever performed at the Holy City Zoo.
Yes, I did.
Oh, cool.
Like Hello. 86. Well, no, 88. And I forgot who the Langen Earl. He died. One of the original co-owners.
John Cantu?
What's his name?
John Cantu, I think.
No. I think he bought it. Maybe he wasn't the original owner. He was an owner, but I remember, does anyone, this is a Kenny Banya, a guy, Barry Sobel from San Francisco, I once worked with. Yeah, he's like Banya, because I wrote a book called 5 Minutes to Kill about the Young Comedian special, and he knew Drake Sather, and I had to take him out for a very nice meal because he got, you know, gave me stories. So I remember, yeah, I had gone to San Francisco, Holy City Zoo, there was Cobbs. Then there was a place, my God, did I bomb.
The other cafe?
No. You drive 3 hours to Chico or Chino. There was a guy, Bob Fisher, that booked a lot of those rooms. And I worked with Carlos Elsraqui, and I had a Letterman credit. So it's like a bar, like by a prison. I don't remember. Yeah, I did the Holy City Zoo, Cobbs, and one or two other places. But San Francisco.
Good time. Rose and Thistle.
Yeah. Cool.
Remember the last time I was there.
Did Tambor have a question?
Yeah, we have a few more questions. Tambor?
Hello. I was wondering if you have any memories to share on your work with Nickelodeon, like Drake and Josh and Nez Declassified?
Yes. I got to tell you that when I did the kid shows, you know, it's not as much money as network, and you're going, this is cheesy. But when some of those kids grew up, it was very rewarding to be part of someone's childhood. You know, it's like, I only did one Drake and Josh, and people like, whenever someone is 23 and recognizes me, I always say Drake and Josh. So my favorite was the Wizards of Waverly Place, because Selena Gomez was so down to earth. And I remember that she was texting, I was by her waiting for action. And then you see, and then she puts, and a friend, the other co-star, says, don't answer it. He's an asshole. He's playing games. And I see Justin, that she was getting texts from Justin Bieber. So then she puts the phone down, and the phone is there. And then I see it rings, Justin, and I wanted to pick it up. Hi, could I say I spoke to Justin Bieber? And this middle-aged guy was getting all fanboy. But she was so down to earth that her fingers were bleeding because her iPhone was broken. And I said, get it fixed. She goes, nah, I want to save the money. Maybe, why was it broken? Maybe she threw the phone, that damn Justin. she was so down to earth. David Henry. I did Hannah Montana. And Miley Cyrus was nice. But by the time I was on the show, she didn't want to be there anymore. So, but Drake and Josh, I was just there one day, and I liked those, the show Ned's Declassified. I had fun. So they're very broad, those kid shows, because even when you're playing the low-key guy, like it's always like a Ben Stein, talk slower. I am very exciting, class. So it's kind of cheesy and silly, but those are the ones that are most sweetest, that to be part of someone's childhood. People like on TikTok tell me that, so it's very rewarding.
Thank you.
Cool. We have another question from one of the comics tonight. Sure. You want to ask?
Hi, thanks so much for being here. It's great meeting you. I was wondering just how do you cope with like the this downtime? Tonight? What's that?
Just kidding. How do I cope with bombing tonight? No.
How do you cope with me bombing tonight? How do you cope with just like the downtime of either the pandemic or even just being between projects as a creative person? Like, how do you find that motivation?
That is hard. I mean, I walk around a lot and people go, "You're the guy who's walking. What's wrong?" But right. Like, actually, when the pandemic first started, I was only charging $5 for a cameo, but I was doing too many. But it's best when I have an idea, but I hate trying to come up with ideas or force ideas. So it's this unstructured life that my mother never got. She always goes, "What do you do during the day? I don't understand," you know? And I try to, you know, keep the place clean. I don't have exotic hobbies. You know, you would think I would just go surfing. I wish I had that passion, but I have this creative urge to, I nap a lot and not more than my cat. But, it can be maddening, but I guess that's the creative thing when you have, I've written a few memoirs and I try to write, but it gets hard doing it by yourself, you know? So I just learned to accept that I am not conventional and most people don't understand. My mother to this day goes, "What do you do during the day? I don't understand." I don't understand.
What about stand-up? Do you stand-up anymore? Or?
No, like I said, you can't dabble. You really have to do this. Like, I have like social anxiety, and this is good when you guys break the ice and stuff, but you really have to have an end game. Like, I'm 63, so it's just to hang out at clubs even before the pandemic, you know, you'd be in like the Hermosa Beach Comedy Club in the green room and all these aggressive comics. I fucking got in the parking lot. I took my shirt off. I beat them up or the dragging or they killed. And you've got to really, you know, before the pandemic, hang out to get stage time to kill, as you know, do the same jokes over and over and got to hang out and be with people. And unless you have an end game, let's say a Netflix special or, you know, being a headliner, it really is hard to keep doing it. And I have other ways of getting my Jones of just, you know, I went through a phase where I did my books of going on lots of podcasts, Mark Maron, Dr. Drew, and telling stories. Cause like, for example, like when I'd go to Hermosa, you're on a show with 8 comics and it's the cadence, as you know, and if you don't get a laugh right away, they go, they know there's someone next. They go, they start murmuring, you know what I mean? So I like more being casual, talking like I am now, like I say on a podcast or little things like that. As you know, you can't dabble, right? So you got to just, so I kind of,
so do you consider yourself? Hard.
And being a headliner was really hard because, you know, the middle act would like play guitar and jump up and down and then I come out. And so, yeah, it's, I rather, yeah.
I was just going to ask, like, if you consider yourself primarily a comic or an actor or a writer, if you had to pick one.
Only one. I'm just kidding.
A comedic actor. I'm not a stand-up anymore, but that's what got my start. You see, I grew up, there was no such thing as comedy nerds. I went into comedy. I was never funny. I was very depressed. But I went with my sister, an older sister, to a comedy club. And I didn't even know what they were. They didn't have YouTube, the internet, Groundlings, all these ways to break in. So someone said, "Oh, J.J. Walker did a set at the Improv, then you go on the Tonight Show, then you go on a sitcom." I went, "That's how you do it." So even though I was so shy, I couldn't look at the audience, that was my path. But I never had a burning desire to be like a guy like Bill Burr who wants to do concerts. And, you know, I always loved the light. I always loved, even this gave me a little anxiety, like looking over the notes and yeah. I don't remember jokes and stuff. It's that kind of, yeah, that vibe.
Can I ask you one? We have time for one more question.
Please ask as many as you want.
Okay, cool. Do you remember when Kramer went all crazy at the Laugh Factory? Was there any signs of him being hella racist when we were on at Seinfeld? Did you know?
No, but Jimmy Kimmel said something that I think I agree with. I don't think he's a racist. I think he's crazy. I remember when I wrote on Seinfeld, he lived near the studio and he would take his bike to work. And one day it was raining and he flags me down. Hey, can you drive me home? For sure. And he gets in my car and he has a bowl of soup and he's trying to eat the soup as I'm driving. Then he goes, can you turn the radio off? I don't want to get any subliminal messages. So he's kind of, so I don't think he's like a Trumper or racist. I just think, and someone, I'm dropping names, I'm sort of was friends with Norm MacDonald, was saying, I think he thought he was trying to do an Andy Kaufman thing. So I think it's just like road rage, which is not so, you know, yes. So I think he's crazy, but I think he's not, like I said, that's cool. Racism isn't his big thing. I know someone who lived next to his mother and he was screaming at the neighbor. So he screams a lot.
Was he screaming the N-word at the neighbor?
this is the important part.
Yeah, no, I don't think, my thing about, you know, there was a thing where Eric Clapton was like racist and years ago it came out, he was screaming he hates the blacks and then they're blaming it on, he was an alcoholic. Now, what I understand is John Mulaney just went to rehab. I can't see him cursing, you know, blacks out.
One time I saw him at Cobb's Comedy Club and he did say the N-word that time when I saw him at Cobb's.
John Mulaney?
Yep.
All right, I was wrong.
I think we have another question from Ruth. Ruth, you want to get in there, Ruth? Oh, no, wait, I did something wrong. Hold on just a second.
It's on Ruth.
There you go. We're back.
Does Jerry Seinfeld, does he like cereal in real life as much as he did on the show?
You know, in the Seinfeld writers, the room where you ate, there was every kind of cereal. Truffleberry, Count Chocula, marshmallow. So he did, it was great. It was great food for 9 months when I worked there. Yes, so he seemed to like cereal a lot.
cereal.
There's a scoop.
Hey, Ruth.
What kind?
I didn't remember his cereal, but I just remember it was a fiesta of any cereal in the cabinet.
What's your favorite cereal?
I think I like Lucky Charms. I like marshmallows. Not the healthiest, not for your kids, but I like Lucky Charms, which is candy, you know.
Okay, is there anything that you wanna? Oh wait, we have one more question. Can we do one more?
I have a question too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess we got a couple more. Let us know when you need to leave.
I don't need to go anywhere. So whatever anyone wants to do.
Go ahead, Vahe. You go. Go for it.
Is it true that you dated Ben Stiller's sister?
Yeah. How did you know that?
I read it somewhere. Am I not supposed to know that? Is that like
No. It's something no one really knows. It wasn't a thing, like, unless someone knows her, would know it.
I did my research.
You did your research. Yeah. She is a character. But so am I. Only in this business could someone like me call someone else a character. So yeah, I used to hang out with the Stillers, and they would lose patience with me, like roll their eyes. Guy, who is this guy? You know, a long time ago. But yeah, I once went to like Nantucket. They flew me there. I was with them, and they had a house there, and it was like. I was like the guy, Beverly Hills Cop, the guy that, you know, from the bad area that never saw lobster. Like, oh, this guy is embarrassing us.
Were you like immediately successful when you started doing comedy, or did it take a little bit of time?
Well, you know, actually I started like maybe a year or so before the comedy boom of the 80s. So I accident came up with this kind of weird act because I had my head down. I couldn't look at the audience and did these weird non sequitur one liners. So I was respected by a lot of comics, except that when you can make a living in New York doing $50. Well, they had that in the 80s in the Bay, you know, a circuit of bars and discos and clubs, you know, and I was very respected, but I would always, you know, at a bar, never headline because the crowd wouldn't like me. I'd be talking. So then, so I kind of, like I said, was getting a lot of notice. But then when I started headlining, my act got watered down because in New York, you could just go right into your act. But then on the road, hey, I guess we're in Buffalo and do a reference to Buffalo. And then, you know, there's the thing where they drop the check and, you know, you really got to kind of work the crowd, which I couldn't really do. So I think about a year and a half, I was, you know, making a quasi living doing the $50 gigs. I was, you know, and you eat for free at the clubs. So I was successful in respect and stuff, but not really headlining. I never liked that. I always kind of struggled with that or colleges. You know,
you got your big break to go on the Young Comedians special.
I guess, you know, I remember I was listening to Marc Maron and Rob Schneider was on it. And he said, what's your big break? He goes, the 1989 Young Comedians special. I go, what the fuck? I was on that show. Why wasn't it my big break? So him and David Spade got SNL from it. So I don't think I ever really had one big break. It was just kind of just stuff, like, you know, when I acted on Seinfeld, that led to a bunch of other sitcom work, you know, and so it's never like, oh, this guy blew up from it. It was just a bunch of things. Yeah.
Hey, Fred.
Maybe this will be. Maybe Whoops. Being on this is my break. What?
Hey, I got a question.
Sure. Oh, okay, who's that?
Eric?
You mentioned groundlings as a means of getting in. Did you do anything with them? Or?
No. I just said when I was like, I tried stand up at 17, then quit for a few years, then went at 20. I was saying there weren't these venues. You didn't know how you got on, SNL or made it. Just basically, I thought, like Jimmy Walker, Freddie Prinze, do my act at the Improv, then go on the Tonight Show, then I'll get discovered. That's the way, unless you made it as an actor, they didn't have these venues when I was starting out, like Groundlings, UCB, you know, all that whole world. So I would suck at like, whose line is it anyway? I'm not good at that kind of stuff.
Improv,
Improv, you know. This guy's like Rick Overton, who's great at it. Set list, that's not my thing.
I have, was there another question, Chris?
Yeah, someone else has been waiting. Kara, go for it.
Hi, thanks so much for being us tonight.
Thank you.
I was just wondering how similar was Julia Louis-Dreyfus to her character, Elaine?
She's similar, but very sweet. She was very nurturing. She, you know, I don't think she's as neurotic as Elaine. She's, she was very nurturing to me, telling me I was doing good, gave me some advice. Then I bumped into her like a month or two after the episode, and I didn't remember her. The episode. So she's very, very cool. I mean, Jason Alexander, yeah, I think Larry David, people ask, is he like Curve? He is a lot like that, except he has more of a filter, but he wants to scream those things out. So, but yeah, she is, she's very sweet. Very cool, yeah.
And Jerry?
What's that?
And Jerry? Or
Jerry?
Seinfeld compared to his character?
He's pretty similar. To be honest, he's, well, he actually said on some interview, he goes, I think I may kind of be on the spectrum because he's not the warmest. He's not the warmest. He not a bad guy. Actually, he's very, very funny off the cuff. Like he could have been like a Letterman or a talk show host, but he didn't need to do that. When people ask who are the nicest I work with, Chris Elliott, a show from Wings, Steven Weber, the guy Monk, Tony Shalhoub. People from the show Wings. And when I was on Scrubs, Zach Braff, Donald Faison, you know, very nice. Jerry, I remember when I wrote my episode, I said, hey, Jerry, thanks for doing my episode. Yeah. So he's not mean or crazy, but he's very funny. His comments off stage.
Do you remember when he was dating a 17-year-old and he was like 40?
Yeah, she'd come by the set. Yeah, Shoshana. Yeah, I remember she'd come by the set. And it's weird how, yeah, that's not a blip on the radar, you know. In today's day.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to get Me Too'd or something.
Everyone knows about Shoshana for some reason. I don't know why. It's this whole cancel thing is very arbitrary where some people like Brian Seacrest had some allegations, but they didn't care. It's like Woody Allen. Yeah.
We were so scared to ask you that question for some reason.
You could ask anything.
Somebody asked this question. So they said Fred has to respond to the jet ski story told by Eddie Murphy. I'll do it again. Okay. Fred has to respond to the jet ski story by Eddie Murphy on WTF with Marin. Did you hear it? Did you hear him do that story? Apparently,
Yep. Someone told me to listen to it. Right before he got SNL, me, him, a guy, Rob Bartlett, I think another comic, I guess you never heard of it. We were in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and we decided to go jet skiing. And Eddie would always do an impression of me because I guess, you know, you fall off and the jet ski circles round and I couldn't get the jet ski and I was going, and a boat would go by. People on the boat, help, I'm getting nauseous from the exhaust. I'm getting nauseous. So Eddie would always do an impression of me falling off the jet ski that I got nauseous and needed help. That was fun hanging out with Eddie 2 weeks before he got SNL. That was amazing.
Did you ever have any run-ins with Bill Cosby? Did you meet Bill Cosby at all?
No. Really? The only thing is I was in an acting class and this redhead, young 19-year-old said she was being mentored by Cosby. And I wonder what that meant. Mentoring her.
Awkward.
So yes. So I never met Cosby. No.
Go ahead.
No, are you guys too young to remember David Brenner? Oh. He was a fun guy. I worked for him. you know, no, great guy, nothing Cosby-ish about him, but I love the people from the 70s, like Cosby. I mean, David Brenner.
Did you write, Ben Feldman asks, did you write, "That's Gold, Jerry"?
I think so. It's so long ago that you hand the script in and they change things, but it did. That guy, the guy Bruce Smirnoff, the real Kenny Banya, said, "I'm huge." And, this is funny. I made up the name Mendy because I thought it was a funny name for Mendy's restaurant, because there was a basketball referee called Mendy Rudolph. And it was just an arbitrary name. There's no real restaurant called Mendy's. But by coincidence, there's a Jewish deli in Manhattan called Mendy's. So they exploited it. They go, "Mendy's from Seinfeld, where soup is a meal." They exploited it. They think it was based on them, or they made it up.
Do you like eat free there now? Or
I went there once saying, and I lied. I said, "Oh, I love the food," and they gave me free turkey, you know, hot open turkey sandwich.
So this is Fred. Like, usually at this time, we have Victor start yelling at people to. But I think he's fallen asleep. He had a big dinner.
And, he didn't
take his insulin medication today, and I think he's kind of out of it. But there he is.
Jesus Christ. Dude, Vahe is the worst fucking interviewer in the history of Q&A. So give it up for Vahe.
That was my first one. So
I think that means that we are out of questions. Is that right, everybody?
Can I ask one? Is that okay?
No. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, we were just kidding. What was the question?
I hope it's not like...
Wait, who is this? Daisy?
Sherry.
No, Sherry, sorry. I hope this comes off.
Oh, sorry, I forgot you.
Can you guess who I am if I start telling a joke?
Oh, Jesus Christ, this isn't a question.
All right, let me try to guess.
Okay. So, you know how everybody has that box of wires? When you, like, open up a box and you keep all these wires just in case someday that you need them? And then someone comes along and is like, "Oh, can I have a charger for that?" And you're like, "Oh my God, I have this huge box of wires that I'm never going to use, but I'm going to try."
That's Jim Gaffigan? I'm not sure. Who?
Jerry Seinfeld?
Mark Martin.
Mark Martin, who? Who?
Mark who?
Mark Martin?
Mark Maron, that's right. I think
Mark Maron,
sorry. Mark
Maron. See, I told you, Sherry shouldn't have that.
He's right. We never throw out any of those kind of, not chargers, those kind of CBD, yeah, totally. What are they called? Those
CBD.
Not CBDs.
USBs.
Sorry, we're on a lockdown here where I live and it sucks. So I'm just... I hope that was okay.
So someone mentioned that everything is opening up April 15th.
Well, they were wrong about that.
In California.
In California, everything's opened up.
Yeah.
25 so capacity of theaters.
We went on lockdown in Ontario and Quebec, is where I'm from.
Yeah, I heard Canada, it's pretty civil there, yes.
Yeah, like it's ridiculous. Like, we have to be inside by 8 o'clock or you get like a $4,000 ticket.
Get out of here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I swear to God, it's ridiculous. Like, curfew at 8 p.m. Yeah,
it's nocturnal.
Well, there's that quote, I forgot who it was. "May you not be fortunate enough to live through memorable times." And these last 5 years, I don't know what's crazier, the... political craziness or the pandemic or, you know, so this is stuff like there'll be like World War II, never run out of story. I mean, you know, it's just crazy. Yeah, just crazy. I don't know. Sometimes I'll do an edible and then I did I hallucinate that or was that on the news? I mean, like, nothing on an edible can be crazier than some of the things, you know, Trump or whatever. It's just, right? Like, I don't need edibles. Just watch the news. Crazy.
All right, Fred, we got one more question for you if you're up for it.
Absolutely.
We want Daisy. She won't turn her camera on, but I'm going to ask for her. She says, tell us about your time on The Nanny. I loved your Fred, the pharmacist role.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's another show where I didn't realize when I did it how big it was, that it's sort of like my niece loved it, old people loved it. It was fun to do. They didn't have an audience. I think Fran was getting a divorce from the guy that she ended up, he actually became gay and they did the show Happily Divorced based on their real story. So I enjoyed being on The Nanny. It was fun. Just, I remember they actually, one of the writers used one of my lines from Seinfeld. She told me, like, on Seinfeld, something like Elaine never takes vitamins. I go, because it makes you nauseous, right? And then Fran shows me her rash. I go, why are you showing me that? That's nauseous making. So I love the line. I'm not bragging. They wrote it where she goes, if you can't stand the sight of a rash, why do you work as in a pharmacy? I go, it's near my house. Actually, I did one episode with Scott Baio, who ended up being insane in real life. If I knew he'd be such an asshole, I would have been a jerk to him on The Nanny. But I worked with him on The Nanny. So yeah, it was fun. Classic TV.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Fred, for doing
night
this.
By night.
Appreciate you being you. Here.
Thank you, Fred.
Everyone, you're all funny. I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad you keep the passion. Yeah.
Now is the part of the show where we beg the audience for tips. And to do that, we're going to give our big fat man a list. Everybody give another round of applause for Fred Stoller before we beg you for tips.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. For-
Thank you so much.
Do you want to plug anything to our 100 people?
I'm not doing much these days. If you like me, you could hire a cameo where I could say one of those lines. That's about it.
Cool. All right, go buy his books, folks.